Random House Audiobooks presents The Power of Gold by Peter L. Bernstein.
About 100 years ago, John Ruskin told the story of a man who boarded a ship carrying his entire wealth in a large bag of gold coins. A terrible storm came up a few days into the voyage, and the alarm went off to abandon ship. Strapping the bag around his waist, the man went up on deck, jumped overboard, and promptly sank to the bottom of the sea. Asks Ruskin, "Now, as he was sinking, had he the gold, or had the gold him?" This recording tells the story of how people have become intoxicated, obsessed, haunted, humbled, and exalted over pieces of metal called gold. Gold has motivated entire societies, torn economies to shreds, determined the fate of kings and emperors, inspired the most beautiful works of art, provoked horrible acts by one people against another, and driven men to endure intense hardship in the hope of finding instant wealth and annihilating uncertainty. "Oh, most excellent gold," observed Columbus while on his first voyage to America. "Who has gold has a treasure that even helps souls to paradise." As gold's unquenchable beauty shines like the sun, people have turned to it to protect themselves against the darkness ahead. Yet we shall see at every point that Ruskin's paradox arises and challenges us anew. Whether it's Perseus in search of the golden fleece, the Jews dancing around the golden calf, Croesus fingering his golden coins, Crassus murdered by molten gold poured down his throat, Pizarro surrounded by gold when slain by his henchmen, Sutter, whose millstream launched the California gold rush, or modern leaders such as Charles de Gaulle, who deluded themselves with a vision of an economy made stable, sure, and superior by the ownership of gold. They all had gold, but the gold had them all. When Pindar, in the 5th century BC, described gold as a child of Zeus, "Neither moth or rust devoureth it, but the mind of man is devoured by this supreme possession," he set forth the whole story in one sentence. John Stuart Mill nicely paraphrased this view in 1848 when he wrote, "Gold thou mayest safely touch, but if it stick, unto thy hands it woundeth to the quick." Indeed, gold is a mass of contradictions. People believe that gold is a refuge until it is taken seriously. Then it becomes a curse. Gold's most mysterious incongruity is within the metal itself. It is so malleable that you can shape it in any way you wish. Even the most primitive of people were able to create beautiful objects out of gold. Moreover, gold is imperishable. You can do anything you want with it and to it, but you cannot make it disappear. Despite the complex obsessions it has created, gold is wonderfully simple in its essence. Its chemical symbol, Au, derives from aurora, which means shining dawn. But despite the glamorous suggestion of Au, gold is chemically inert. That explains why its radiance is forever. In Cairo, you will find a tooth bridge made of gold for an Egyptian 4,500 years ago. Its condition good enough to go into your mouth today. Gold is also extraordinarily dense. A cubic foot of it weighs half a ton. The density of gold means that even very small amounts can function as money of large denominations. Unlike any other element on Earth, almost all the gold ever mined is still around. Much of it now in museums, bedecking statues of the ancient gods and their furniture, or in numismatic displays, some on the pages of illustrated manuscripts, some in gleaming bars buried in the dark cellars of central banks, a lot of it on fingers, ears, and teeth. There is a residue that rests quietly in shipwrecks at the bottom of the seas. If you piled all this gold in one solid cube, you could fit it aboard any of today's great oil tankers. Its total weight would amount to approximately 125,000 tons, an insignificant volume that the U.S. steel industry turns out in just a few hours. A ton of steel commands $550, 2 cents an ounce, but the 125,000 tons or so of gold would be worth $1 trillion at today's prices. Is that not strange? Out of steel, we can build office towers, ships, automobiles, containers, and machinery of all types. Out of gold, we can build nothing. And yet it is gold that we call the precious metal. We yearn for gold and yawn at steel. When all the steel has rusted and rotted, and forever after that, your great cube of gold will still look like new. That is the kind of longevity we all dream of. Stubborn resistance to oxidation, unusual density, and ready malleability. These simple, natural attributes explain all there is to the romance of gold. Even the word gold is nothing fancy. It derives from the Old English yellow, G-E-L-O, the word for yellow or golden. This uncomplicated chemistry reveals that gold is so beautiful, it was Jehovah's first choice for the decoration of his tabernacle. Thou shalt overlay it with pure gold. He instructs Moses on Mount Sinai, within and without shalt thou overlay it, and shalt make upon it a crown of gold round about. That was just the beginning. God ordered that even the furniture, the fixtures, and all decorative items such as cherubs were also to be covered in pure gold. God issued those orders many thousands of years ago. What is the place of gold in the modern world of abstract art, designer jeans, complex insurance strategies, computerized money, and the labyrinths of the internet? Does gold carry any significance in an era where traditions and formality are constantly crumbling beyond recognition? In a global economy managed increasingly by central bankers and international institutions, does gold matter at all? Only time can tell whether gold, as a store of monetary value, is truly dead and buried. But one thing is certain. The motivations of greed and fear, as well as the longings for power and for beauty that drive the stories that follow, are alive and well at this very moment. Consequently, the story of gold is as much the story of our own time as it is a tale out of the past. From poor King Midas, who was overwhelmed by it, to the Ali Khan, who gave away his weight in gold every year, from the dank mines of South Africa to the antiseptic cellars at Fort Knox, from the gorgeous artworks of the Scythians to the Coricancha of the Incas, from the street markets of Bengal to the financial markets in the city of London, gold reflects the universal quest for eternal life, the ultimate certainty and escape from risk. The key to the whole tale is the irony that even gold cannot fulfill that quest. Like Ruskin's traveler jumping off the boat, people take the symbolism of gold too seriously. Blinded by its light, they cashier themselves for an illusion. If gold were more plentiful on earth, say as abundant as salt, it would be far less valuable and interesting, despite its unique physical attributes and beauty. Yet gold has been discovered on every continent on earth. That sounds like a contradiction, but it's not. Although gold deposits are widespread, in one form or another, no one area has yielded its gold easily. Finding and producing gold demands immense effort relative to the amount of glittering yellow metal that makes its appearance at the end of the process. For example, in order to extract South Africa's annual output of around 500 tons of gold, some 70 million tons of earth must be raised and milled. This radically distorted ratio of effort to output appears to have done little to discourage people from pursuing the worldwide search for gold. Perhaps the most telling evidence of how highly prized, vital, essential, and irresistible gold has been from the earliest of times. Relative to the needs for it, gold does appear to have been more plentiful in ancient times, especially in Egypt and the Near East, than it has been since the Roman era. A little bit of gold goes a very long way when it is used only for adornment and decoration, and not for coinage or hoarding. Until the development of coinage, which put gold into the hands of the masses and greatly expanded the need for it, most of the available gold was owned by monarchs and priests. Its use was ceremonial, in large part, a medium of advertising power, wealth, eminence, and proximity to the gods. Whatever was left was used for jewelry and other personal adornment. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?